Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. I am in Southern California, and I am live, and I'm in our studios. And we are broadcasting, pushing it all out, still on CBS Sports Network as well, with our TV simulcast. In fact, if you're at home listening, and this is something you normally don't do at this point, we do have a TV component, CBS Sports Network. Look for that. And you can watch the radio program on TV as well. Program is brought to you by Rockin' Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rockin' Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Coming up next hour, Udonis Haslam of the Miami Heat. We had Jonathan Isaac of the Orlando Magic last hour. Coming up after the program, the Jim Rome Podcast with Michael Bisping, UFC Hall of Famer. It's an awesome conversation. I had it yesterday, so I know it's good. You want to look for that. And if you're already subscribed, you don't have to look for that. It will find you. Now, as we start hour number two, I want to change up. I want to do something a little bit different. Now, I've mentioned in the last few weeks on a few different occasions that going forward, rather than doing some sort of Mount Rushmore or best games or favorite players segment, instead of doing that because everybody's doing that and it's kind of lazy to me and not that entertaining and not that interesting, instead, what I want to do, or at least try, is go back and do some deep dives on a few moments that still resonate. Now, today's deep dive includes references to this.
Let's go!
Brett Favre goes back to pass. He pumps.
Hey, y'all, watch this.
Now he fires. Can't believe what I'm seeing right now.
We got two more. Yeah. Let's go.
Come on,
cheer. Woo! Woo! That's right. Today, we are going to take a look back at the old gunslinger himself, Brett Lorenzo Favre. Woo! But we don't have time to do a deep dive on all things Brett Favre. So I've got to pick my spots. And the spot is the chapter of his career that took place from the moment he retired as a member of the Green Bay Packers. Now, that includes the trade to the Jets, playing for Eric Mangini, the junk picks, retiring as a Jet, unretiring, and coming back as a Viking, that insane first season with the Vikings, planning to retire yet again, the Dilla hunt, unretiring, and getting the ever-loving crap beaten out of him in the second season. Later on this hour, Jeff Perlman, the author of Gunslinger, the remarkable, improbably iconic life of Brett Favre, is going to join us. And then there will be time for you to weigh in with your favorite Brett Favre takes and memories. But why don't we start where this chapter began, with Brett Favre's retirement presser back in March of 08. You might remember that press conference. You know, the one with the gigantic microphone in his face.
I am officially retiring from the NFL and Green Bay Packers. And as much as I've thought about what I would say and how I promised I wouldn't get emotional. It's never easy. I'd like to thank the Packers for giving me an opportunity as well. I hope that every penny that they've spent on me, they know it was money well spent. It was never about the money or fame or the records. And I hear people talk about your accomplishments and things that it was never my accomplishments. It was our accomplishments. The teammates that I played with, and I can name so many. It was never about me. It was about everybody else.
Man, my man had all of us eaten out of the palm of his hand. What a scene that was. At the age of 38, the three-time MVP, the Super Bowl champ, the owner of nearly every meaningful quarterback record at that time, was walking away from the game. And he was walking away after he led the Packers to the NFC Championship game only a few months earlier, only to throw a costly INT in overtime that gave the Giants a chance to win that game and go on to the Super Bowl. He said that day,
"I'm going out on top, believe me. I could care less what other people think. It's what I think, and I'm going out on top. I know I can play. but I don't think I want to. And that's really what it comes down to. What matters is it's been a great career for me, and it's over.
So he was doing what every single athlete I've ever spoken to wants to do, but so few are able to go out on their own terms. And Favre was, as he put it, once again, quote, "It's been a great career for me, but it's over," end quote. Sure, it wasn't, B, not even close. Not only was it not over, it was just starting. On April 25th, he was placed on the reserve retired list, and the Packers planned to retire his jersey during a regular season game against the Vikings that season. At least they thought they were going to. But Favre, addicted to the pub and getting people to look at him, had other plans. He said, quote, "I started getting the impression in May that, boy, I feel like I need to play. The tough part was, how do I get myself out of this jam?" And that was before any of this ever came out. I was thinking, boy, this is not going to look good. Finally, I don't know the day, I woke up and I said, "I can't control what other people are going to say, so why worry about it?" End quote. In other words, Favre's gonna Favre. And on June 20th, he called Packers head coach Mike McCarthy and told him he wanted to come back. He wanted to change his mind. He wants to change his mind and forget that extremely emotional retirement press conference ever happened. He wants to just show up and bump Aaron Rodgers from the QB1 spot. Which you might imagine, that conversation with McCarthy did not go very well. Not from McCarthy. As you might also imagine, Favre didn't give a damn about that. But McCarthy did, and he told the old gunslinger as much. Quote, "When he picked up the phone again, after he dropped it, he said, 'Oh God, Brett, you're putting us in a tight spot.' He said, 'Brett, playing here is not an option.' Those were his exact words," end quote. And you know what Favre was thinking at that point. "Yeah, that's fine, Mike. That's fine. But know this. You don't tell me whether or not I fit into your plans. I tell you whether or not you fit into mine. You don't tell me whether or not I'm the quarterback of the Green Bay Packers. I tell you if and when I want to show up. So keep your phone close, fatso." So in July, he has a press conference call, or I should say a conference call, with McCarthy and Packers GM Ted Thompson and says, "I'm coming back. I want to come back." Then suddenly, 3 days later, he requests his release from the Packers so he can join another team. And it's pretty clear where he wants to go. The Packers then respond to the request for release with a statement that reads in part, quote, "The finality of his decision to retire was accepted by the organization. At that point, the Green Bay Packers made the commitment to move forward with our football team," end quote. So the Packers at that time are saying, "The old man retired, we accept his decision, and we have moved on." And the old man is saying, "Who retired? Me? Oh no, I'm not retired. Do I look retired?" Apparently not, because on July 17th, the Vikings had no comment on allegations by the Packers that they made inappropriate contact with Favre before or during his efforts to unretire. So at this point, this is going badly for everybody, including Favre, who either doesn't know or doesn't care, and the best way to clean the whole thing up is for this guy just to go away once and for all. But he can't. He can't. He's got a problem, and it's a problem that's bigger than him. It's a problem of addiction. The addiction to me. And if he retires, nobody's going to look at him. Nobody's going to talk about him. But the Packers are so determined to make this guy go away, they reportedly start stacking cash in front of him to get him not to play. According to reports, the Packers offered Favre a $20 million marketing agreement. A marketing agreement! What, like that one where he pimps that copper sleeve that apparently fixes torn ACLs? Or amputated legs? You know, like, hey, did you have your leg cut off in a horrible car accident? No problem. Rock this copper sleeve. Your leg will grow back. Or like that marketing campaign for that nose hair and beard trimmer that he also pimps? Or like that marketing campaign where he's rolling around like a pig in the mud playing touch football with a bunch of randos in those jean commercials? You know, like those kind of marketing deals? No, not really. Not like those. This one is $20 million to get this guy not to play. Beat it. Leave us alone. Here's 20 mil. I mean, do you even remember that part of the story? And then on August 3rd, the NFL says Favre will be reinstated and added to the Packers' active roster. He flies back to Green Bay, thinking he's going to battle Rodgers for the starting job. And then on August 6th, the Packers finally wash their hands of the dude, and they trade him to the Jets. Brett Favre is going to be a New York Jet. And at that time, that was like the weirdest thing ever. Until it wasn't. Because it was about to get even more weird. Favre didn't want to be a Jet. Favre wanted to be a Viking. But he knew the Packers were never going to let that happen. So he went to the Jets to play for Eric Mangini, the gunslinger and the man genius. That's a combination. But as weird as that combo was, it's still not nearly as weird as some of the promises that the Jets allegedly made to convince Brett to join them. Among the promises, he'd be allowed to wear camo when the team traveled for road games. And that Eric Mangini would name his son after Brett. I'm not sure what's more ridiculous, that Favre would have the balls to ask for that, or that Mangini would do it. What did he name his daughter? Browning Nagel? Hey, everybody, I want to introduce you to my daughter, Broadway Browning Mangini. Except for the old gunslinger. Even for him, this is wacky as hell. And so began Brett Favre, the Jet year. Man, what a year it was. It started with Favre and the Jets beating former Jets quarterback Chad Pennington and the Dolphins in the season opener. New York dropped their next two. By week seven, they were 3-3. But then Favre and the Jets caught fire. They won three straight. They beat the Pats in overtime. They made it four straight. They took over the lead in the AFC East. 1 week later, they smashed the undefeated Titans 34-13, and Favre was saying this after the game. Quote, I'm not going to sit here and say we've established ourselves as the best team in football. All it says is I think we beat the best team in football today. Definitely if you go by record and the way they played. They've been the best team in football, end quote. But somewhere along the way, something happened. Something happened to Favre's arm. And by something, I mean he completely wrecked it. And the Jets' season went down the drain. They went 1-4 down the stretch. They missed the postseason. The man genius got fired. And, of course, there was something else that happened that year in New York. There were the allegations that Favre, a married man, was sending unsolicited junk pics to a Jet staffer, Jen Sturger. Not just once, but repeatedly. And as if that mental image of Favre sending junk pics is not bad enough. Think about this. If you want to napalm your brain after you hear what I'm about to say, here's some more nightmare fuel. According to Deadspin, Sturger claimed that in one of the photos Favre allegedly sent her, he's masturbating while wearing a pair of Crocs. Dude was taking care of himself while rocking a pair of Crocs. It's like the most gunslinger thing ever. I repeat, while wearing a pair of Crocs. Think about that. One of the most legendary quarterbacks of all time, the gunslinger, firing off junk pics while wearing Crocs and being glossed the dong slinger. And then, of course, you had those voicemails, allegedly from the dong slinger to Sturger.
Jim, it's not a setup. Just got done with practice. Got meetings here, and well, for about a couple more hours, I'm going back to the hotel and just chill. So, the mid deck, because I'll be in the building for a couple hours. Love to have you come over tonight. But I know I think Aaron came up and asked you if you would give him your number, or he was going to give you my number, but I understand. But the mid tech, love to see you tonight. All right, talk to you later. Bye.
Yeah. Anyway, sometime later, he was asked about that.
There's a internet report today that accuses you of sending some inappropriate text messages to a female employee of the Jets during your year there. Would you care to respond to those allegations?
You know, I mean, no. I mean, I'm not getting into that. I got my hands full with the Jets and trying to get some timing down with our guys. That's all I'm going to discuss.
Yeah, Brett, I'm not sure that answer is going to suffice. You're not even close. Then in February of 2009, he told the Jets he was retiring. Quote, I have family and friends who are like, all right, Brett, is this the real deal? To me, it is. It is. Believe me, I've had a wonderful career. I couldn't ask for anything more. It was worth a shot for me to go to New York. I wish I could have played better down the stretch. I didn't. It's time to leave. End quote. It always is. It always is, but he never does. And that was not the end. Not even close. Because when we come back, we have the Viking years. And it gets even better. Stay tuned. Also coming up later on this hour, Jeff Perlman, the best-selling author of Gunslinger, joins us and he shares his thoughts about that time. If you had trouble finding time to fully wax your car, 303 Touchless Sealant will save you hours. The SiO2-based formula is completely touchless and it's a quicker alternative to waxing your vehicle. It lasts twice as long. It's so easy to use. You simply spray it on and you rinse off. 303 Touchless Sealant provides superior protection against paint fading and provides the ultimate shine in no time. It only takes minutes to get that same water-beating protection that you get from a full wax. It saves you hours spent in the garage. It's safe for paint, gel coat, fiberglass, plastics. It can even be used on your windshields and wheels, too. It can also be used when you're looking to prolong the time in between waxes and ceramic coatings. 303 products have been trusted for over 40 years and are the official car care products of those who know. It's available now at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts, AutoZone, or Advanced Auto Parts store. Visit 303radio.com for more information.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Tomorrow night, starting at 9 Eastern and 6 Pacific, join CBS Sports Network for the PBR Las Vegas Invitational. Get ready for four straight days of the toughest sport on dirt, only on the 24-hour home of CBS Sports. Continuing with our look back on the old gunslinger. All right, February 2009, 11 months after his first retirement, Brett Favre retires again. He's saying his right arm is too sore, and they quote, it's time to leave. In April, he is released from the reserve retired list by the Jets. So technically, he's a free agent, but says, quote, at this time, I am retired. I have no intention of returning to football, end quote. Of course, nobody believes that. After all, this is the old gunslinger we're talking about. He's physically incapable of retiring. Well, actually, that's not fair. He retires all the damn time. He just can't stay retired. And then, a few days later, the Vikings express interest. And thus, that predictably annoying entire dance begins yet again. On July 28th, Brett Favre calls Vikings head coach Brad Childress. He says that he's staying retired. Quote, it was the hardest decision I've ever made. I didn't feel like physically I could play at a level that was acceptable. I would like to thank everybody, including the Packers, the Jets, and Vikings, but most importantly, the fans. End quote. 3 weeks later, Favre completely goes back on his word again. And he signs with the Vikings.
You need to cross over that line. You got to take that chance. You know, 39 years old, your arm may not feel like it did at 21. But the pieces are in place here that you don't have to do as much. If they were willing to take that chance, I was too.
So the gunslinger is back. And more importantly, he's in the place where he wanted to be all along. Let's be real. He never wanted to be a Jet. He wanted to be a Viking. He wanted to be in the same division as the Packers. He wanted to face them twice a year so he could jam them hard twice a year. And they did get off to a good start. They beat Cleveland on the road in the opener. Favre doesn't do a ton other than turning and handing it to Adrian Peterson. But then in the third quarter, he hits Percy Harvin for a touchdown pass. He then decks him in the celebration. Harvin said, quote, I thought we were going to bump chests or something. He wasn't slowing down. I took it and we fell to the ground. It was a great feeling. End quote. Dang! What do we got here? The old gunslinger's back. Woo! Just slinging the ball around the yard and hooting and hollering. Then they go on the road. They beat Detroit in week 2. Favre making his 271st straight start. breaks the record for consecutive starts. Does not put up huge numbers, but he doesn't have to, with Adrian Peterson in the backfield and the Vikings playing a Lions team that had gone 0-16 the year before. After the game, Jared Allen announces that Favre has a new nickname. Quote, "Can you please stop calling him Brett Favre? It's the Silver Fox." And if you thought Viking fans were fired up about the Silver Fox after two games, it's about to get even better. Because in his official home debut as the Vikings quarterback, Favre had the team locked in a battle with Sean Hill and the 49ers. Down by four, and the offense struggling in the second half, Minnesota gets the ball back. You remember this? On their own 20, 89 seconds left, he completes the first two passes. Then an incomplete. Then another completion. Then he clocks it. Then he goes deep to Sidney Rice, but it's incomplete. Completion to Harvin for 15 yards to the Niner 39. Clocks it again, completes a 7-yard pass, and now they're on the Frisco 32. 12 seconds to go, down by four. It's time for the Silver Fox to go gunslinger.
Far back to pass, pumps to the left, 8 seconds left. He gets away from the pressure, fires to the end zone. It's caught! It's Greg Lewis! Touchdown!
An absolutely ridiculous dime and a perfect call from Paul Allen. Vintage gunslinger, pump faking as he drops back, rolling to his right, stepping up, avoiding one pass rusher, stepping into the pass, getting hammered by another pass rusher, and somehow, look it up, hitting Greg Lewis in the back of the end zone and running a dagger through the Niners. Viking fans were going ballistic. I thought the roof was coming off. 3-0, you couldn't ask for a better start to the season. Actually, you could, because the Packers were coming to town for week four on Monday night. You know Favre was going to be amped. 24 of 31, 271 yards, 3 TDs, no turnovers. The Vikings beat the Packers, 30-23. They go to 4-0. Packer fan remembers, Viking fan remembers. Then they won their next two. Then they lost to Pittsburgh. Then they were 6-1, heading into Week 8, November 1st, the return to Lambeau. Packer fans had a little something for Brett when he came out the tunnel.
No pleasantries on the field at Lambeau tonight. The Minnesota Vikings come into town, and this was the reaction about 45 minutes ago when Brett Favre came onto the field to warm up.
Unfortunately for Packer fans, the old gunslinger had a little something for them. Because after falling behind 3-0 in the first, Minnesota ran off 24 straight. That's a 24-3 lead. And while Green Bay did make it close in the third quarter, Brett was never losing that game. No chance. The old dongslinger had a score to settle. And he wanted to make sure he settled it. And if you were booing him before the game, he wanted to acknowledge that he was pretty damn good when it was over. Quote, "Packer fans, cheer for the Packers first. I know that. But I hope that everyone in that stadium watching tonight said, I sure hate those jokers on the other side, but he does play the way he's always played," end quote. Vikings were so loaded that year. But if you thought that Favre was just there to show up and hand the ball off and be a game manager, think again. No way that guy's strapping on a helmet every week and not letting that rocket arm loose every now and then, which he did in a Week 12 win over the Bears. He chucked it around that yard 48 times in a 36-10 blowout. And then after the game, I had to tip my hat. And I did tip my hat on this show, especially when I heard the audio from the on-field mics. Brett Favre hitting Percy Harvin with a rocket. Here is how it sounded.
Brett Favre goes out of the shotgun, pats the ball, fires to the...
There is nobody in the NFL that throws a ball that sounds like that. There are other strong-arm quarterbacks. Jay Cutler's got an arm. It doesn't sound like that. He hit Vasante Shenko with a scud. It sounded like this.
Favre, shotgun, empty backfield. He goes back to pass. Fires. Touchdown, Vasante Shenko!
It's like a pitcher in a game, 3-2, who's got to punch somebody out and can dig deep and get a few extra MPH. The old Gunslinger was the exact same way. How about when he hit Chester Taylor with that missile?
Barb rolls out to the right. Chester to the 10, to the 5. Leap through the end zone. Touchdown!
What are you going to say, man? The guy's 40, and he's never played better. He's your league MVP. And I'm going to have to apologize to this guy, win, lose, or draw, every single Monday from here on out. Vikings went 12-4 in the regular season. That was a Rome flashback. That's what I was saying about him when he was doing those things. 33 TDs, 7 picks. 33 TDs, 7 picks. Amazing for a guy who's that loose with the ball. And especially at that age. That was an old man doing pretty amazing things and doing them without the benefit of Brady's diet and plyometrics and recovery pajamas and doing it after taking years and years of punishment that Brady never had to endure. Brady does not play the game like a linebacker, like the old dong slinger did. Then in their first playoff game, they smashed the Cowboys 34-3. Brett throws for 4 TDs. He's fired up as hell after. Listen to him in the locker room. Think about how many drops we got from this one clip alone.
I told Percy I'd do this. Not the pants. Pants on the ground. Pants on the ground. Pants on the ground. Pants on the ground. Hey, let's go. Break it down. Come on, cheer. That's only one. We got 2 more. Yeah. Let's go. Spikes on 3. 1, 2, 3.
That clip is 21 seconds long. You listen to it. Listen to everything iconic in that clip. It is a tour de force. It's Brett Favre. It is most Brett Favre. In 21 seconds, you get, I told Percy I'd do this. Pants on the ground.
Pants on the ground.
Let's go. Come on, Jared.
Come on, Jared.
Woo! And Jared screaming in pain. He damn near wrecked Jared with that butt slap. Did you hear that? He beat the ever-loving crap out of Jared Allen with that slap. I'm surprised he didn't break his hand on that. Or Jared's ass. Or both. Imagine the injury report the following week. Jared Allen, questionable, with a slapped ass. After that joyous win, the next game was the NFC title game in New Orleans against the Saints. 60 minutes away from the Super Bowl. This dude's insane. Like he's really going to pull this off. But he took one hell of a physical beating in that game. The Saints were beating the hell out of this guy. The Saints' defense was doing to Brett Favre what Brett Favre just did to Jarrett Allen's butt 1 week earlier. If I didn't know any better, I'd say that Greg Williams dropped a bounty on Favre that day. Told his players to affect the head, touch the head, and they did. And it didn't even matter because he just kept coming. And with 2:47 left in the fourth quarter, the score tied at 28. Vikings get the ball on their own 21. Not dead, can't quit. How was this dude even still alive after the beating he took? I've got no idea. I just know. Not dead, can't quit. And he didn't. He led them on a drive that went down to the Saints' 33-yard line. He and they were still breathing. But they were called for too many men on the field. It dropped them back to the Saints' 38. With 19 seconds left, this is what happened.
Chester the single set. Burying in motion. Right to left, back to the right. Brett Favre goes back to pass. He pumps. Now he fires over the middle. Intercepted. I can't believe what I'm seeing right now. It was intercepted by Tracy Porter. Near side to the 40. And John Sullivan runs him down at the 47-yard line. You've got to be kidding me. I can't believe what I just saw.
Looking at that play, he should have just held on to it, Paul. He should have. He could have easily gotten 5 or 6 yards if he would have just pulled that thing down and dove forward.
But why do you even ponder passing? I mean, you can take a knee and try a 56-yard field goal. This is not Detroit, man. This is the Super Bowl.
Holy crap, what an amazing call that is. Initially, Paul Allen is despondent about what he's seen, and then the rage builds, and by the end of it, he's about to explode. Why do you even ponder passing? I mean, you can take a knee and try a 56-yard field goal. This is not Detroit, man. This is the Super Bowl. It was, and it was Brett Favre, the old gunslinger. When we come back, another point of view. Jeff Perlman wrote an entire book about the gunslinger. He will share his thoughts about the gunslinger and especially that time. That's coming up next. In the meantime, hit me up on Twitter or email with your thoughts, your favorite take, your favorite memory. What do you think as you hear all of this about the old gunslinger? All of that still ahead.
You're listening to the Jim. Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. We continue hour number two. We're talking about the old gunslinger, Brett Favre, taking a look back. Joining us right now to help with that conversation is a New York Times bestselling author. His books include The Bad Guys Won, Love Me, Hate Me, Boys Will Be Boys, The Rocket That Fell to Earth, Sweetness and Showtime, and of course, Gunslinger, the remarkable, improbable, iconic life of Brett Favre. He was a panelist on our daily TV show back in the day. Good friend of the program. He is Jeff Perlman. First off, Jeff, it is great to have you back. How are you? How's your family? How are things?
I'm good. It's interesting, Jim. As you know, and as I've praised you many times, I live in California in large part because of you, and I moved from New Rochelle, New York, and my dad for years hated that I moved to California, and when New Rochelle was quarantined, he actually looked at me for the first time and said, maybe that was a good move. So I owe that to you, dad's approval.
Good. I appreciate that. Jeff Perlman joining us. All right, Jeff, there was no way that I could do a look back at Brett Favre without talking to you. I mean, we could do a three-hour show talking about him, and it still wouldn't cover it. I've had to rush through even that part. I got to pick my spots. So when you think about Brett Favre, the New York Jet, for instance, what is the first thing that comes to mind for you as Favre as a Jet?
I think it was a really weird and awkward and clumsy fit. You know, he desperately wanted to go to the Vikings, and the Packers wouldn't allow that to happen. And it basically came down to either him being shipped to Tampa Bay or to the Jets. And when he got the call that he was traded to the Jets, he and his agent were just dumbfounded and very upset about it. And the whole year was kind of a weird fit. He stepped in for Chad Pennington, who had been the quarterback for a long time. The Jets' top receiver, Lavernius Coles, was Chad Pennington's best friend on the Jets. It was a really awkward year, I think, that started with a lot of hope and ended with a thud.
Jeff Roman's joining us. You know, go back to that point, though, about him and the way things ended in Green Bay. He, of course, announced his retirement, and then he started to have second thoughts. What's your sense as to why the Packers did not want to bring him back? At that point, were they just tired of him, or were they eager to move on to Aaron Rodgers? How much of it was about Favre, and how much was about Rodgers?
You know, it's really interesting. Through the years, especially after it happened, actually, the Packers got a lot of blame and for mangling it and mismanaging. And I always thought that was terribly unfair. You had a quarterback, you gave him every opportunity, and I love Brett Favre, but you gave him every opportunity to keep that job, to come back. You endured the, I'm going to retire, I'm not going to retire, over and over again. Finally, he says he's going to retire. He holds a press conference announcing that he's going to retire. You have this guy, Aaron Rodgers, who you believe is going to be what he has actually become. You decide to hand it over to him. And then Brett Favre basically says, never mind. I think I'm going to come back. And people were mad at the Packers at that point, if you remember, really mad at the Packers for not giving Favre the opportunity. And it was just ridiculous. They had moved on. They were ready to hand it over to Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers was clearly ready for the job. So I always thought the Packers got a lot of blame, and it's easy to blame an organization when Favre and his indecisiveness was the number one reason it ended that badly in Green Bay.
I could not agree more. I said that at that time, and I was swimming upstream, but I agree with you. It was right then. It's right now. Jeff Perlman joining us. You know, it was such an awkward year, Jeff, but it's easy to forget. There was a point during that year where they got rolling. They beat the Pats in overtime in Week 11. They took over first place in the AFC East. Then the next week, they blew out a previously undefeated Titans team. Just how good were the Jets at that point?
Jets are really good. You know, I've struck up a decent friendship with Thomas Jones, their running back from that year, and I had some talks with him about just how ridiculously good that. If you look at that team, Favre was their quarterback, and he was playing really well until he hurt his arm. Thomas Jones and Leon Washington were the running backs. You know, Lavernius Coles was a legit wide receiver. Cotri was a legit number two. Dustin Keller was a really good tight end at that point. Like, they had a lot of talent going on. They had a very strong defense, and they were 7-3. They were 8-3. They beat Tennessee. They're 8-3. Like you mentioned, they beat New England in overtime. And then Favre's arm just starts falling apart. And I think Chris Baker, the tight end, was one who first in a practice was like, "What? Why is Brett throwing these ducks?" And basically the coaching staff's like, "No, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine." And they go in and they play a pretty bad Denver team. And they lose, I think it was 34-17. They lose the next week to San Francisco. They beat the Bills in overtime, but barely. And then they lose to Seattle, lose to Miami. And the killer, they lost to Miami the last week of the season. Chad Pennington was a quarterback of the Dolphins. And, you know, Favre's arrival was the end of Chad Pennington and the Chad Pennington era. And Pennington wound up having a pretty far superior season to Favre, who by the end of that year could barely lift his arm and could barely throw a football.
So what was your sense as to what his teammates thought had happened to him and his arm?
I think a lot of it was they just thought it was old age, and clearly he was hiding an injury. I think a lot of the blame, as is often the case in these things, Eric Mangini was the coach, and I think Mangini had a lot of positives as a head coach, but they built an offense around Favre on the quick. They got Favre on the quick, built an offense around Favre on the quick, made a lot of the terminology Favre-friendly, talked to Favre about what plays he liked to run, made it a Favre-centric offense in a matter of weeks, and as soon as Favre's arm starts hurting, they never adjust. Like I said, they had Thomas Jones and Leon Washington, two really, really high-quality running backs at that point, and they barely used them. And they kept throwing, having Favre throw 30, 35 times a game, and he just didn't have any zip left. And it was really, really bad in that Denver loss. I mean, he looked terrible, and after that game, there were a lot of people on that team who were just wondering, why is he still throwing the football when there's nothing on it anymore?
We're talking to Jeff Perlman. So, Jeff, later we find out during that season that he was allegedly sending unsolicited nude photos to Jen Sturger, who was a Jets employee at that time. How does all of that fit into the context of the Jet year for Brett Favre?
I just think he was a really, like I said, out of places. He didn't have any close friends on the team. He was in New Jersey, in suburb. People always think New York, you're playing for the Jets or the Giants. New York City, the bright lights. You know, he was living in Morristown, New Jersey. Like, you're by yourself in this house. Your wife is back and forth with your daughters. You're all alone. You're bored. It's a fascinating year. That and his Atlanta year, his rookie year, probably my two favorite years of Brett Favre as far as writing. But it was the loneliest year of his career, without question.
Jeff Perlman joining us. So ultimately, he does get to Minnesota, which is where he wanted to be. In the regular season, he was amazing. He wasn't throwing INTs. He was having a blast. They dominate the Cowboys in the first playoff game. And then you have that NFC Championship game against the Saints, which ends with that INT to Tracy Porter in the end. When you think about Brett Favre, Jeff, and that play, is that not one of the most Brett Favre plays ever?
I'd say there are two most Brett Favre plays ever. One is, you remember the throw he made to Sterling Sharp early in his career against Detroit? He just threw going left, and he threw this just bullet right to win a game against the Lions. It was, you know, iconic in every possible way. And the throw against New Orleans in the playoffs, it was everything Favre. It was the reason I always say, I don't think Brett Favre is one of the five or six greatest quarterbacks in NFL history. I just really don't. I think he's the most entertaining quarterback in NFL history. I think you never knew what you were going to get. Same thing with the interception with Corey Webster against the Giants. Those were throws that a smart, seasoned Joe Montana, Johnny Unitas, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson never, ever even consider making. But the whole drama of Favre was that he made these stupid throws because his arm was so strong. 60% of the time they got through, but then the other 40% of the time you had disasters like that one.
Jeff Perlman joining us. That was a disaster, Jeff, and then of course that final year was even worse. He got hurt, his starting streak ended, he wanted to play in the outdoor game on the frozen turf against the Bears. That ended terribly. So let me ask you this, that final season, does it tarnish his legacy, or is that just how it is and part of the entire Brett Favre experience?
I just think it's no different than, you know, Johnny Unitas as a Charger, or, you know, to a lesser degree, Joe Montana as a Chief, or a million different guys in weird uniforms. I think at the end of the day, I truly do. I think a lot of people I talk to think Brett Favre's final throw as a Viking was against the Saints. A lot of people don't even remember his last year when he started 13 games. He had 11 touchdowns, 19 interceptions. He was just done at that point. And I just think most people don't even remember it. So to me, legacy-wise, that has almost no impact.
He is a New York Times bestselling author, Jeff Perlman. So finally, the end of his career was ugly, but what do you make of Favre now, Jeff, and how he's approaching life after football?
I think it's great. It's funny. When I was working on the book, a lot of people were telling me, oh, if you talk to Brett, you're going to see decline come really soon, and he doesn't seem that sharp, and blah, blah, blah. And everything I've seen, I'm still close with members of his family. I'm actually very close with his mother, Benita, who's just great. And it just seems like he's really embracing his life and enjoying his life. And he does a lot of biking. He does a lot of running. He's heavily involved in his daughter's lives. He's a grandfather. he just seems like he's really kind of figured it out, how to be happy after football. And I think it took a while, as it does with most guys when they retire. But I think it really worked out well for him. It makes me happy. Generally makes me happy to see Brett Favre in 2020 being who he is.
Jeff Perlman is a New York Times bestselling author. I round down that list of books. Also a panelist on the Daily TV show back in the day. Good friend of the program. Jeff, it is so good to have you back. Glad to hear you're doing so well. And thanks for sharing your thoughts on Brett Favre. I could not do that segment without you.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jeff. Great talking to you. Jeff Perlman. And I knew that he'd have really good insight as to that time, especially that year in New York. All right, so that hour, that's an hour on Brett Favre. I actually have some additional thoughts to jump the third hour just to finish that off. If you want to share your thoughts on any of that, hit me up. You can get to Twitter at Jim Rome. You can call 1-800-636-8686. I'll take telephone calls. If you want to email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at HaveAtake.com. In addition to that, also coming up next hour, another really good interview, Udonis Haslam of the Miami Heat is going to join me at 20 past. On top of that, another really good conversation. Michael Bisping, a UFC Hall of Famer, is the subject of the Jim Rome podcast, episode 123. That goes out after the program today. I taped the interview yesterday. It's great. It's one of my favorites. I know I've said that, but generally, when I say that, I mean that, and it's true and holds up. But this one, of the 123, this is one of my favorites. Michael Bisping showing up just the way you'd want him to. And that's coming up later on this afternoon. Make sure you look for that. Third hour straight ahead. You're in the jungle. I am Jim Rome. Stay tuned.